Alrighty, we are back. This is Stephen McCarthy. I am with David Epstein of Sports Gene and a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. And we will have a link up, but he's wrote a tremendous number of articles related to science and sport, as well as being a high-level athlete in college and high school. So, David, we were talking a little bit about this world of training and how do you develop athletes. And one of the things I think that we were talking about over break is this idea of individualized training. And I'll give one other quick story, and then I'll get your thoughts. John Taylor Gatto was one of the top teachers, you know, in New York City in the 1989, 1990, something like this. And he had come up with the concept of having an individual curriculum for each individual student because each person learns differently. How does that apply to the world of training athletes?
Yeah, so while I think that there are certainly principles that apply to all athletes for training, especially at the beginning of skill development, what genetic science is showing us is the same. For exercise genetics is showing us exactly what medical genetics showed us. Medical genetics showed that no two people respond to any pharmaceutical the same way because of differences in their genes, and we're seeing the same thing for training. Because of genetic differences, people have an individualized response to any type of training, and sometimes that's in the extreme. And so really, there's no cookie-cutter training program that's going to work well for every person. And so I really think if we're not taking sort of a trial-and-error approach to finding the training that's best for us, then we're not really getting all we can get out of ourselves. And I look back at my own training career where, you know, I'm training for things like the 800 meters and the mile. I was better running 30 to 35 miles a week of targeted intervals than I had been running 85 miles a week of distance. At all distances, I was better. Even cross country, I was better. And so I sort of found what training works for me. And I have a friend who was in special forces in the Air Force, and when he got up to the highest level of training, he got his own coach. Every guy had to go one-on-one, you know, and that obviously requires a tremendous amount of resources, right?
Yes.
But ideally, I think, you know, they know those, their lives are on the line for their training, and that each guy can get the best results for his unique mentality and biology if he has personalized training.
And see, I think that is, and John Taylor Gatto talks about it, you know, as he was a middle school teacher, and so he had 120 eighth graders, you know. He said, resource-wise, I knew that it was the right answer, but I didn't have the capability of getting there because I just didn't have enough time in the day.
Yeah.
It does really come down to it if you really want to eliminate the resource question, like your special forces guy, where literally you have an individual trainer that understands all these components and trains your individual goals, genetics, you know, all that kind of stuff. Because I'll give you one more story on the other side, then we'll move over to the future. But there was a guy, a friend of mine is a college coach at a Big Ten school, and he was training a pro guy, and he was really having trouble being lethargic and fatigued, and training wasn't going well, and so they went and did blood tests, and they found out that him eating spinach was causing, you know, his gut health to get all wrong and everything to continue to cascade from there. So he stopped eating spinach, and magically everything just popped right back into line. And it just goes to show you that if you were to go to any dietitian, nutrition, oh, spinach, you got to have spinach, you know, that's just one of those main, you know, superfoods, you know. How do you apply that to what you're thinking?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's you know, in line with that and with the special forces guys. I mean, they're doing all kinds of physiological testing, you know. And so I think that's kind of gets to the danger of cookie-cutter advice, you know.
Yes.
Whether that's some diet fad or some training fad, that if you're – most of us are measuring nothing, right? Like, we're not measuring anything even intuitively. We're not doing any kind of physiological testing. We're not doing anything. And we don't have anyone doing it for us. And we're not even having an eye toward trial and error. But even if we're not going to do that level of testing that would find things like that, you know, if you're doing something that's not working or you're having a health problem and you say, well, this person next to me is doing the same thing and they're not having a problem, they're eating spinach and they're not having a problem, well, the problem could be your genome, you know, not just the environment. I think you have to keep that in mind and instead of just banging your head against the same wall.
And see, the funny thing is it still comes down to, like you mentioned, individualized training for that individual doing that individual program is the premium program. But But again, it's a resource question more so than anything, because you just don't have that much time in the day. All right.
Yeah.
Now let's move over to the future, because a friend of mine, Michael Much from Yahoo Rivals, who's going to be coming on the show after David, we were kind of talking about future applications and the philosophical, you know, long-term results, so to speak. First of all, you have a bigger viewpoint. You know, you have, a perspective of the whole world. You know, we're looking at Minnesota, so to speak. Mm-hmm. How has these ideas infiltrated into the collegiate level and then into the high school level?
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, in some cases in good ways, in some cases bad ways, to be honest. I mean, so the idea of, like, personalized training, for example, I think you're seeing a proliferation of coaches at the higher levels for a reason,
yep.
and increasing specialization for a reason, and increasing attempts to, measure athletes in ways that are better than the NFL Combine, which has all sorts of measures that are not done well. But at the high school level, there are all these genetic testing companies that are being targeted to athletes' parents, basically, and some are better than others, but there are a bunch out there that are – their marketing hype is way beyond the science that they're putting forward. So that's something that I think parents need to look out for. One gene, and maybe this is an aside, but that I'm frustrated that people don't know more about, there's not more information directly to consumers, is the APOE4 gene variant, which we know predisposes some people to having permanent brain damage if they get hit in the head a lot, as in football, you know, and – that, I think, sort of high school parents should be more aware of, but that's not the gene test that's being marketed toward them. It's more the gene of, say, we're going to tell your kid if they're a sprinter or an endurance athlete, and that's not most of the time what the science said. 23andMe, of all the companies that are being the most sort of careful and accurate with their information, of the ones that I've submitted my own DNA to, I think 23andMe has the highest standards.
Good, because that is one of the questions, the one that we've talked about was 23andMe. And in the best case scenario, let's put it out 5 years from now, how do you foresee the combination of these organizations that can put this information together and then apply it to your life? And then I have a philosophical question for you.
I think that there's going to be two major realms where you're going to see the applications. One is in the so-called injury gene testing, and there's just the science of studying genes that predispose people to certain types of sports injuries is really being sort of led by this group of scientists in South Africa, and they've just partnered with a company called Genomix, which is GKNOWMIX, to allow doctors to order these tests, for example, for genes like COL5A1, which codes for collagens, which are like the body's glue in tendons and ligaments. And certain versions make people more likely to tear an ACL, for example. But there are things you can do. You know, you can do what these scientists call prehabilitation, strengthen certain support muscles to make that less likely to happen. And I actually know there are already some NFL players taking advantage of that kind of testing. So I think that is going to become more common. And then I think the kind of testing like that I did for the book, where I was tested for these genes that show I would very likely have a very rapid response to endurance training, I think that will become more common, because there the question is, well, you might not think you have good endurance, but you don't really know because you haven't trained. And a lot of so-called talent is your training response, not just where you are before training. So I think there's a lot of value to be had there in telling someone, like, hey, if you pick this up, you would probably improve in leaps and bounds. You might want to give it a try, both from an athletic skill standpoint, but also from a health standpoint, because the scientists looking at that are finding genes that, for example, predispose someone to have a bigger drop in blood pressure if they do a certain kind of training. And so if their goal is to have a drop in blood pressure, you know, it'd be nice for them to know what that type of training is.
Yeah, because it's an interesting double-edged sword, because the philosophical question Michael and I were talking about, and I'll pose out to you, is if you're a parent and you're looking at this, and it's kind of into the Angelina Jolie, you know, type of, you know, I'm going to kind of bring it out there because it's sometimes easier to see, you know, is the sense that she felt that she was predisposed to breast cancer. So therefore she had, you know, the operation to go ahead and take that away, if you will. But it, it leads to an idea, can you control the future question, or is it a dovetail feathered in, you know, type of a scenario where are you going to control the future, or are you going to say, hey, this is good information we can guide ourselves by, but it's not the end solution?
I think for the most part it's going to be the latter, but it's partly a mix because most genes – so Angelina Jolie doesn't know that she was going to get breast cancer. She just knows she was at way increased risk, and that by the time she found out about it, it, you know, you would have rather done taken preventative measures. And that's how most genes work. Most of them tell you – so despite the fact that when genetics gets in the news, it's usually like, this week we found the alcoholic gene or the chocolate-loving gene. That's not how most genes are. There are some genes that are very deterministic, right? Like the genes that give you 10 fingers and toes and all the same brain chemicals as other humans. Barring some extreme environment in your development phase, those are going to turn out similarly for most people. But many other genes are just sort of proclivity. So they just tell you about risk information. And so I think the real challenge is going to be helping people understand what statistical risk means. You know, it's like trying to explain to someone how they should invest in the stock market. It's like you try to have them understand risk information, and it's really, really difficult. And I think doctors and scientists are going to have to try to do a better job of doing that. You know, we're sort of
it gets down to a logical discussion if you bring it into the risk reward question. You know, because you can already see a situation where a young kid might be predisposed to be a swimmer. Let's just throw it out there. And but the dude's 6'10" and can dunk a basketball with ease without even trying, and just as you know can do it. But that's not very good for, you know, that analogy didn't work out right. But you get my point, is essentially he wanted to do a different sport than the one that he's supposed to be doing, so to speak.
Yeah.
How
do you
balance between that information?
Well, since the vast majority of athletes are not going to be anyone who's remotely in the realm of, like, making any money off of sports, I think for most people, enjoyment is the primary factor. And so I hope as we have more testing for these genes, that instead of using them to say, oh, kid, you have to do this, that instead of providing less options, it'll provide more in the sense of saying, okay, you can do what you want, but you may be less likely to be injured and you may experience more rapid improvement in this other thing. So don't necessarily be afraid to try this other thing. But the fear, of course, is that, you know, an overbearing parent will say, like, nope, you have to go do this. And I think if the motivation comes from the parent, you know, it's like Tiger Woods says that the parent's desire to have the child play is not what matters. It's the child's desire to play and to force the parent to allow them to play. And so I think if you do try to pigeonhole a kid and they don't have, even if they have the physical skills, but they don't have the mentality to suffer and to have goals that are a long way in the future, it's not going to work out anyway.
It is, because I do agree that it comes down to a ethical or moral discussion, you know, about you as your family, you know, what you're going to use the information, because you can easily jump into the ditch and all of a sudden, you know, life would be hell, you know, for families if they take the information and use it improperly.
Yeah, that's going to be a real challenge of communication.
Where can people get a hold of your book?
It's on Amazon, The Sports Gene. It's on BarnesandNoble.com. It's in Barnes & Noble all over the place, and also some local booksellers. But both Barnes & Noble and Amazon have it stocked online right now.
Done. Well, thank you very much. If people would like to get a hold of you directly, is there a place that they could do that?
Yep, I've got a – this will be an easy one to remember. They can email me at david@thesportsgene.com. And I didn't expect such a good reception to the book, so I'm dealing with more email. So I'm going to be slow, but I am putting them all in a folder, and I do expect to respond to everything.
Well, I just think that it is one of those subjects that seems so simple when you start, but when you start to expand it out, it really takes on more – specific individual questions, and I'm sure that's ultimately what's happening, is that people are want, hey, what about my specific situation, you know, so to speak.
Yeah, and the book, the topics are so broad and cover so much of the world in different sports. I mean, that was the challenge, was trying to get it between two covers, you know, because there's a lot of complexity. But yeah, so I think it's given people a lot of entry points into these questions.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.